Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and this is side one of For the Record program number 331, titled Connecting the Dots, Part 5, subtitled Walking the Snake. Veteran listeners will recognize the title as an allusion to the Nazi tract Serpent's Walk, published by the National Vanguard Books, the publishing arm of America's largest Nazi group, the National Alliance. Time permitting, I will give more details about that in the past. This is yet another broadcast dealing with the momentous and horrible events of September 11th of 2001. Let me stress that due not only to the complexity of the events, but the limitations of time, necessarily some of the dots that I am connecting here might not appear to the relatively new or uninitiated listener to be as connected as they actually are. That is not meant to be condescending, but simply due to the scope of the event and the limitations of time, I will not be able to give all of the ancillary discussion that might be required. So I want to emphatically refer listeners to other broadcasts dealing with September 11th. They are available from a CD and tape duplication service called Spitfire. Time permitting, I will give you more information about that. And sister station WFMU-FM in Jersey City, New Jersey, is archiving the For the Record programs on Real Audio. More recent programs are streaming at WFMU.org/Dave Emery, D-A-V-E-E-M-O-R-Y. And older programs are available for download only on Real Audio at a longer URL, which is linked not only to the other WFMU website that I just gave you, but also to the For the Record section of the Spitfire website at www.spitfirelist.com. We are going to continue from the discussion that we have had concerning the Saudi connection to the September 11th incidents. And let me stress that in addition to the Wahhabi/Saudi/World Muslim Congress/Afghan connection that we spoke about and the Islamo-fascist dynamic that I spoke about, not to be misunderstood as equating Islam with fascism, far from it, but the Wahhabi sect originating in Najd in Arabia, which was actually predicted by the Prophet Muhammad an area that was forecast by Muhammad himself to be an area of a source of confusion and corruption. The Wahhabi sect is Islamo-fascist and has strong historical links with international fascism, including the Bormann Group, the House of Saud, married in turn into the Bin Laden family, and the Bush family. And those connections are dealt with in numerous broadcasts about this subject and others. One of the very interesting aspects of the Saudi connection to the events of September 11th is that not only have they not been cooperative, but there are indications that they may have had forewarning. Most newspapers in the United States have not carried this. However, the Financial Times of London, in their Wednesday, October 10th of 2001 edition, did carry this story. This is by Rula Khalaf in Riyadh. It's headlined, Saudis warned Bush over policy on Israel, and it reads in part as follows. Crown Prince Abdullah of Saudi Arabia told Washington 10 days before the September 11th terror attacks that U.S. policy towards the Arab-Israeli conflict had become untenable. According to diplomatic sources in Riyadh, the prince's letter to President George W. Bush prompted U.S. reassurances that apparently led to U.S. backing for the establishment of a Palestinian state. The Riyadh sources said the letter was part of a dialogue started in the June meeting in Paris between Crown Prince Abdullah and Colin Powell, U.S. Secretary of State. The letter shows the world's largest oil exporter trying to influence U.S. policy on the Middle East conflict at a time when Arab public opinion and governments had become increasingly disillusioned by U.S. backing for Israel. This suggests that President Bush's statement last week supporting the idea of a Palestinian state was not directly tied to U.S. efforts to bring Arab nations into the coalition against terrorism. The Saudi message is believed to have indicated that U.S. bias toward Israel was making it impossible for the Saudi leadership to follow policies that were in both countries' interests. President Bush is said to have written back to reassure the Crown Prince that the message had found a listening ear. Well, in addition to many of the connections between Wahhabism, the Saudi royal family, the Bin Laden family, and international fascism, and what I call the Underground Reich, I want to note that in For the Record Program 284, we noted that during the 2000 election campaign, the elder George Bush was in direct communication with Crown Prince Abdullah through the Carlyle Group, a prestigious and wealthy international investment firm funded in part by the Bin Laden family. I also noted in For the Record program number 308 that the elder George Bush had actually called the Saudi royal family on behalf of his son and said, don't worry, the younger George Bush is going to do the right thing vis-a-vis the Arab-Israeli conflict. So note that 10 days before the September 11th terror attacks, Crown Prince Abdullah of Saudi Arabia told Washington that its stance on the Arab-Israeli conflict was untenable. More about the Saudi connection to these events. The following is from the New York Times of Saturday, October 13th of 2001. This is an article by Jeff Girth and Judith Miller of the New York Times. This is headlined, Philanthropist or Fount of Funds for Terrorists. And this concerns a wealthy Saudi named Yazin Al-Qadi, last name Al-QADI. And this describes a charitable organization that is run by Mr. Yazin Al-Qadi called Muwafaq, not a name you want to mispronounce on the air. That's spelled capital M-U-W-A-F-A-Q. And it has been alleged by the Bush administration that this organization is, in fact, connected to support for Bin Laden. This article reads in part, Yazin Al-Qadi is among the prominent Saudis who those in need of charity or shrewd business advice could turn to. But the United States government now says that Mr. Qadi and many other well-connected Saudi citizens have transferred millions of dollars to Osama bin Laden through charities and trusts like the Muwafaq Foundation, supposedly established to feed the hungry, house the poor, and alleviate suffering. Skipping down. In 1995, the trustees of the Muwafaq Foundation filed a libel suit in London against the newsletter Africa Confidential for linking the foundation to terrorist activities in Africa. The publication lost the lawsuit. Court papers in that case, provided by Stephen Emerson, a writer and commentator on terrorism, list the trustees as Mr. Qadi, under the spelling Yazin Qadi, and five others, including two members of the Bin Mahfouz family. Quote, they're the creme de la creme of Saudi society, unquote, said Patrick Smith, editor of Africa Confidential. By the way, that's the newsletter that lost litigation in connection with the Muwafaq Foundation. That newsletter had alleged that the Muwafaq Foundation was connected to terrorist activities in Africa. More about the Bin Mahfouz Muwafaq connection. Beginning that last sentence again, they, speaking of the Bin Mahfouz family, they are the creme de la creme of Saudi society, said Patrick Smith, editor of Africa Confidential. The Bin Mahfouz family controls the National Commercial Bank of Saudi Arabia, which is the kingdom's largest bank and is the banker to the royal family. By the way, of course, in-laws to the Bin Laden family, as we've looked at in For the Record 292 and 308. Continuing. Sheikh Khalid bin Mahfouz paid $225 million, including a $37 million fine, to escape possible charges in connection with the 1991 collapse of the Bank of Credit and Commerce International. Well, the name Khalid bin Mahfouz and the BCCI connection may very well ring a bell for veteran listeners. I would note that in early July of 2001, the individual who in the elder George Bush's Justice Department was, shall we say, less than vigorous in pursuing the investigation into BCCI, Robert Mueller, was made head of the FBI. The BCCI connection would have gone to the Iran-Contra scandal, the Iraqgate scandal, to Munzer El-Kassar. It also would have gone to James R. Bath, who was not only the North American business representative for the Bin Laden family, but helped to capitalize George W.'s first oil company. It's been speculated that people who knew Bath at the time that he had very little money of his own, and so quite possibly the part of the go capital for Arbusto Energy, W.'s first oil company, came from Bath's wealthy Saudi clients, including perhaps the Bin Laden family and also the Bin Mahfouz family. Reviewing an item that we read in side A of For the Record program number 329, this is an excerpt from the book The Mafia, CIA, and George Bush by Pete Bruton. published in hardcover by SPI Books, copyright 1992, ISBN number 1-56171-203-5. And of the James R. Bath W. connection, we read, "It was at the Air National Guard that Bath met George W. Bush. They became good friends, but according to Bush, never did any business together. However, records filed in a lawsuit in Houston involving Bath contradict the president's son. They show Bath was an investor in a Bush oil and gas enterprise." And skipping down, "Several months after Bath and Taylor started Jim Bath and Associates, Bath got a huge break. He was named as a trustee for Sheikh Salem bin Laden of Saudi Arabia, a member of the family that owns the largest construction company in the Middle East. Bath's job was to handle all of bin Laden's North American investments and operations." And in For the Record program number 329, we took a look at the connections between the elder George Bush through the aforementioned Carlyle Group and the bin Laden family. That, by the way, from the Wall Street Journal of September 27th of 2001. More about the Bath bin Laden connection, skipping down. Bear in mind that James R. Bath was the helped put forth some of the venture capital for W's first oil company. "Several months after Bath was named as a trustee for bin Laden, he became the trustee for Sheikh Abdullah Barum, who owned a large Saudi Arabian cement and steel company. Then, sometime later, he began working for Sheikh Khalid bin Mahfouz, the former chief executive officer of his family's national commercial bank, Saudi Arabia's biggest and most closely related to the royal family bank. Sheikh Khalid remained in his position at NCB until 1 week after he and his London-based associate, Haroon Kaloun, were indicted in New York in 1992 on charges that they had schemed to defraud depositors, regulators, and auditors of the insolvent BCCI. And in charge of that investigation, again, Robert Mueller, currently head of the FBI. More on the Saudi connection to the events of September 11th. Saudi Arabia has not only been less than cooperative in connection with this event. Bear in mind that the Saudis changed intelligence chiefs for the first time in 20 years this past summer, and that there are also some influential Saudis left the United States a few days after the attack. The Saudis have refused to freeze the bin Laden family's funds. Reading now from the New York Times of Thursday, October 11th of 2001, this is an article by Jane Perlez of the New York Times. It's datelined Washington, October 10th, and headlined, "Shaky Ally, Saudi Cooperation on Bin Laden Lags, USAID Say." And it reads in part, "Saudi Arabia has so far refused to freeze the assets of Osama bin Laden and his associates, and has proved unwilling to cooperate fully on the investigation of the hijacking suspect in the September 11th terror attacks," Bush administration officials said today. "The failure of a critical ally in the Muslim world to address the major concerns of Washington has put the relationship under increasing pressure." Skipping down. "In blocking an effective financial squeeze on Mr. bin Laden, the Saudis were acting in old ways," a former official said, quote, "The Saudis say they have this under control," said William F. Wexler, who worked on counterterrorism at the National Security Council during the Clinton administration, again quoting, "but they have not had either the legal regime or the political will to take the kind of actions the United States wants," unquote. Skipping down. "Another concern raised by the administration is the Saudi disinclination to help in the investigation of the suspected hijackers involved in the September 11th terrorist attacks. At least six of the men obtained United States visas in Saudi Arabia and then headed to this country via various routes. The Saudi authorities are providing little help on requests by the FBI and the CIA for background checks on the suspects," administration officials said. "Such reluctance to cooperate is familiar to Americans who investigated the truck bomb attack in 1996 on the Khobar Towers housing complex in Dhahran, Saudi Arabia, in which 19 American servicemen were killed." And I would add that pursuant to those attacks, Saudi bin Laden, the bin Laden family's construction firm, got a bunch of wealthy contracts as a direct result of those attacks, which are being attributed to the Bin Laden organization. What we're going to do now in connection with the September 11th attack, and bear in mind that we haven't got the time to go into all of these connections at the length that I and listeners might like, but again, I refer interested listeners to other broadcasts on this subject. What we're going to take a look at now is some of the German connections to the September 11th attacks. And again, I believe that the underground Reich, involving intelligence elements associated with German intelligence, dating all the way back to the World War II period, at least in a bureaucratic, inertial sense, and operational elements dating back to the long association between U.S. intelligence and Middle Eastern governments, including the Saudi-financed and Grand Mufti of Jerusalem-founded World Muslim Congress, an Islamo-fascist organization heavily involved with not only international fascism and the underground Reich, but with the Afghan support effort that spawned Osama bin Laden, World Trade Center 1 attack mastermind Ramzi Youssef, and also other Islamo-fascist terrorists who had their genesis as warriors with the Afghan support effort. What we're, and again, it should be noted that, as we will see, many of the most important evidentiary tributaries run through Germany. Now, in numerous past broadcasts, I've talked about the Echelon Network, which is operated by U.S. intelligence and by British intelligence, and the vitally important Menwith Hill Listening Station in Yorkshire in the United Kingdom. I have stated in the past that I do not hold a brief for any abuses committed by either NSA or British intelligence or Echelon or Menwith Hill, but nonetheless, those installations are vital to U.S. intelligence, and I have cited the heat being put on Menwith Hill and the Echelon Network as in all likelihood resulting from or stemming from German intelligence, and this is, in my opinion, an attempt to not only discredit but also to hamper U.S. and British intelligence gathering. This is, like in my opinion, the September 11th attacks, an extension of the combat of World War II with what, for lack of a better term, could be called Germania versus Anglo-Saxonia. And again, in For the Record program number 182, excerpted in For the Record program number 329, we talked about some of the Wahhabist and bin Laden-connected elements operating in oil-producing areas of the former Soviet Union, such as Dagestan, and that could be thought of as the Eastern Front. What you saw on September 11th could be considered the Western Front, and I think on the balance, the bin Laden Islamo-fascist connection, which aims at not only annihilating Israel, but driving the U.S. and Britain, particularly the U.S., out of the Middle East, that could be thought of as Africa Corps 2. And I believe that it is a Yaqiist, third-position fascist phalanx, which is aiming to do what there simply were not enough German troops to do in World War II. The Yaqiist reference is a reference to the vitally important and brilliant work Francis Parker Yaqui, Dreamer of the Day, by Kevin Coogan, whom I've interviewed many times on this program, and I think his book is essential for understanding the events of September 11th. This should not be misunderstood as constituting an endorsement for the working hypothesis I'm presenting in this series or in these broadcasts by Kevin Coogan. That goes for all other people whose work I have accessed. This is my analysis. It is their original research, and I submit humbly to the work that they've done, and that's why I'm accessing it. This should not be misunderstood as an endorsement on their part for the work that I am doing. Now, I think not only in terms of the Saudi behavior in connection with the events of September 11th, but also a very, very interesting article that surfaced in the German press coming from German intelligence sources and pointing a finger in the direction of the Echelon Network. As I have stated in For the Record program number 326, I believe that elements within the U.S. intelligence apparatus did have advance warning of this attack, but that in fact elements of U.S. intelligence were subverted by other elements of U.S. intelligence that in fact are allied with the underground Reich and are aiming at not only overthrowing but destroying the United States and annihilating Israel and pushing the United States out of the Middle East. Now note the following article. Research credit on this is to a member of the listening audience. This comes from the website www.infowar.com/class. This is an article by Ned Stafford, S-T-A-F-F-O-R-D, of Newsbytes at Stateline Frankfurt, Germany, September 13th of 2001. It's headlined, Newspaper, Echelon gave authorities warnings of attacks. Now, note not only the continuing German attempt at discrediting Echelon, but also impugning U.S., British, and Israeli intelligence, and, by extension, I think, deflecting the blame. There's a principle in law called consciousness of guilt, and I think from a counterintelligence standpoint, the application of consciousness of guilt to the article I'm about to excerpt is very, very significant and more than a little damning with regard to German culpability in this incident. This article reads in part, U.S. and Israeli intelligence agencies received warning signals at least 3 months ago that Middle Eastern terrorists were planning to hijack commercial aircraft to use as weapons to attack important symbols of American and Israeli culture, according to a story in Germany's daily Frankfurter Allgemeine Zeitung, or FAZ. By the way, that is Germany's most prestigious daily, sort of the German equivalent of the New York Times. Now notice the source for the FAZ article. The FAZ, quoting unnamed German intelligence sources, said that the Echelon spy network was being used to collect information about the terrorist threats, and that UK intelligence services apparently also had advance warning. The FAZ, one of Germany's most respected dailies, said that even as far back as 6 months ago, Western and Near East press services were receiving information that such attacks were being planned. Within the American intelligence community, the warnings were taken seriously and surveillance intensified, the FAZ said. However, there was disagreement on how such terrorist attacks could be prevented, the newspaper said. I wonder whether perhaps between the lines that was a reference to the fifth column that I've been talking about. Now, note again that Germany's most prestigious daily, the Frankfurter Allgemeine Zeitung, the FAZ, quotes unnamed German intelligence sources as saying that, surprise, surprise, the Echelon network had advance warning of this, and I don't know whether that's true or not. Again, I think the indications are that elements of U.S. and British intelligence had advance warning. That's quite possibly also true of the Israelis. But reading between the lines, with German intelligence in effect putting the whammy on U.S. intelligence, continuing their propaganda assault on the vitally important Echelon network and Men with Hill, which I have endorsed before, while again condemning any abuses of that. Again, that's a technology. It's like a jet airliner. It can be used to transport people or as a weapon of mass destruction. It depends on the usage. I have also pointed out that there is a greater threat to the individual privacy of the average person who submits a urine sample to somebody, a company for which they are applying for a job. There's DNA in that urine, and that becomes their property. Note also what the European Parliament report on Echelon had to say. And again, this is very important to consider in connection with the article that I just read about German intelligence attempts at deflecting blame onto the U.S., Britain, and Israel, and the Echelon network in connection with this event. This is from the New York Times of Thursday, September 6th of the year 2001. In the World Briefing section, we find the following article by Suzanne Daly of the New York Times. It reads, it's titled, Report on U.S. Spy System. Now listen carefully what the European Parliament report on Echelon had to say. The United States-led spying system known as Echelon can monitor virtually every communication in the world by email, phone, or fax that bounces off a satellite, the European Parliament was told. But in reporting on a year-long study of the system that was prompted by concern that American companies were using data from the system to gain a competitive edge, Gerhard Schmidt, a German member of the parliament, said that many European countries had similar abilities and that the very high volume of traffic made exhaustive detailed monitoring of all communications impossible. Well, if many European countries have similar abilities, what is the high-tech intelligence center of Europe? Well, that, of course, is Germany, which raises some interesting questions about German failure to anticipate this very attack. And again, I think a counterintelligence application of the legal principle of consciousness of guilt comes in very, very handy in terms of ascribing responsibility for this incident. And again, I believe that lies with the Underground Reich involving elements within the Bin Laden organization, or perhaps controlling the Bin Laden organization, the Saudi milieu, the Bush family, the Underground Reich, and all of the elements that I have delineated in connection with that. The following article is from the Financial Times of Thursday, September 27th of the year 2001, about the German role in the Al-Qaeda Bin Laden network. We excerpted this article in For the Record program number 329. This is by Hugh Williamson in Hamburg. It's headlined, Al-Qaeda Group Has Strong German Support Network. It reads in part, Germany has long been an important base for the Al-Qaeda movement of Osama bin Laden, the chief suspect behind the September 11th attacks on America, according to terrorism experts and intelligence officials involved in monitoring extremist groups in Germany. Quote, within continental Europe, Al-Qaeda has its strongest support network in Germany, end quote, says Rohan Gunaratna, G-U-N-A-R-A-T-N-A, a terrorism expert at Scotland's St. Andrews University who has studied the network closely. Again quoting, they have been active for at least 6 or 7 years, unquote. That talking about bin Laden networks in Germany. More about bin Laden networks in Germany, also from the Financial Times, this of Friday, October 12th of 2001. Article by Hiba Saleh in Cairo, headlined, Egyptian terror cell linked to bin Laden, and skipping down, a 32-year-old Libyan man arrested on Wednesday in Munich is the alleged link figure between at least 2 European cells of supporters of Mr. bin Laden, writes Hugh Williamson in Berlin. Lased bin Henni was arrested on an Italian arrest warrant on charges of belonging to a criminal group, document falsification, and involvement in illegal people smuggling, according to Italy. Skipping down. The German chief federal prosecutor's office said yesterday Mr. Ben Henny had also been under investigation in Germany since at least April for alleged links to a separate Frankfurt-based Al-Qaeda cell known as the Meliani Group. Why didn't the German equivalent of Echelon pick this up? Same question in connection with the following article, also from the Financial Times, this of Tuesday, October 9th of 2001, this also by Hugh Williamson in Berlin. It's headlined, German Inquiry, Berlin Demands Boost in Terror Probe. And this reads in part, the German government has demanded the investigation into the country's connection to last month's terrorist attacks in the U.S. be stepped up. The demand was made after a crisis meeting at which government ministers criticized the head of the investigation for not pursuing the alleged terrorists energetically enough. Skipping down, speaking of German chief prosecutor in the case, K. Nehm, N-E-H-M. In addition, Mr. Nehm's office has been accused of ignoring evidence gathered by the police before the attacks, which suggested that Islamic terrorists were operating in Germany. Mr. Nehm's spokeswoman has previously said the evidence provided earlier by the police had not been sufficient to start an investigation. And, skipping down again, referencing side A of For the Record Program 330 about the Islamo-fascist connection in Bosnia-Herzegovina, Ali Izetbegovic, two Waffen SS divisions, in effect Hanjar 1 and Hanjar 2, and the Afghan connection. Police in Bosnia-Herzegovina's Muslim Croat Federation yesterday arrested a man accused of making a telephone call to a senior aide of Mr. bin Laden, according to the area's interior minister, adds Robert Wright in Budapest. The arrest will revive speculation, rife since the September 11th attacks, about links between Islamic radical terrorists and Islamic fighters who participated in Bosnia's 1992 through 95 War of Independence. And that concludes side A of For the Record program number 330. We're going to 331. Excuse me. We're going to continue with this analysis in side two of For the Record program number 330. My name is Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.